560 AM Philadelphia and WPEN HD2 Burlington, Philadelphia. The following programming is sponsored by Mark J. Bernstein. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group. Entrepreneur, author, and financial consultant Mark Bernstein helps high-performing entrepreneurial business owners create a vision for the future and follow through on their goals and intentions. Ange Honorato is a business growth strategist who blends psychology and business together to create conscious leaders and business owners who impact the world. Founders Forum is a radio show podcast sharing the real stories behind entrepreneurship as founders discover more about themselves while providing valuable lessons and some fun and entertainment for you. Now, here's Mark and Ange.
Good morning, America. How are you? I ask you that question I say this on every show. Good morning, America. How are you? I think it's a good way to begin, and it comes from the song, the Arlo Guthrie performed song. He didn't write the song. The city of New Orleans. Good morning, America. How are you? Anyway, so I just love it as a way to introduce the show. But to this morning, I'm really asking, America, how are you? We had an election yesterday, presidential, big congressional and presidential election. And half the country is very unhappy and the other half is very happy. And we knew it was going to be that way, however it turned out. And the question I have, and Jess Hallahan's with us today, and John Arado is not here today, and I introduced Jess before. She's founder of Journey to Yourself, and she helps employees at companies with stress and anxiety. And Joe Arcangelo is here. Joe Arcangelo is here. I'm stumbling over my words a little bit this morning. And I'm going to introduce Joe in a minute and tell you more about him. But here's my question for today. It's about perspective. So, you know, half the country's not happy. And my advice to people that aren't happy about it is, you know, take your moment, grieve, but then you got to move on. You know, you got to live beyond it. That's how I deal with things like that. And I have a lot of things like that. I've dealt with a lot of situations, especially over the last few years, that I'm not totally thrilled with. But, you know, life goes on. I mean, that's only one answer. I want to start with you, Jess, because you're in the business of dealing with anxiety and stress. You know, what is your advice to people that might be going through this today or on any subject or anything that's beyond their control that happens and how they react to it?
Yeah, of course. So I always like to define the word stress, which is a reaction to change. So this is good or bad, right? So however you perceive the stressor, right, that's on you. And so how your reaction to it is also on you. So my mindset is becoming aware of how you are reacting and what you can do about that reaction, right? So if you're happy, great. You're still going to have a reaction. So just, you know, being mindful. And if you're upset, that's also fine, but also being mindful and aware of how you are reacting, right? So kind of taking that accountability on yourself too.
So awareness is a great thing. Joe, how about you? I know you've had situations like this in your life.
It's how you deal with them. Yeah. You know, it's, you know, I have strong feelings about yesterday. And, you know, it's how you deal with adversity or how you deal with success that allows you to stay focused on doing what you need to do. So,
well said. So good time to introduce Joe. So Joe Arcangelo is co-founder and managing partner of Inception Group, has a very interesting story, and he's going to share it with us today. So Joe and his partner, Brian Sulpizio, did I say that right?
Yep.
Founded Inception Group in September 2011 with a goal to restore and rebuild business trust by delivering high-quality clinical outsourcing in a consistent, efficient, and reliable manner. With more than 35 years in the outsourcing industry, Joe has sought first to understand the intrinsic and extrinsic needs of his stakeholders, employees, clients, and patients, and then built a business designed to meet those needs. The Inception values, integrity, trust, and passion are a reflection of Joe's personal accountability to his clients and teams. And I know I haven't talked to you a lot, but what I've talked to you about is I know that you have a passion about what you're doing. And we'll get into that. And they have helped shape the culture of the company. Today, Joe is responsible for cultivating and articulating the vision of Inception while driving continued growth and sound financial stewardship across all functions and regions. Joe has been the recipient of multiple industry and business awards, including the Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year Award, which is very, very powerful and impressive award this year in 2024. So welcome, Joe. Thanks for being here this morning.
Thanks. I have nothing more to say. You said everything, so that was a good job.
Well, thank your marketing person, because I'm just reading.
She
you know?
Did a good job.
She did a great job. Congratulations. So we're here to have fun. That's part of it, so I'm glad we're laughing. And you have an interesting story. You didn't start out on this path at all. So tell us about your humble beginnings and what happened since.
You know, in preparation for this, I asked how far you wanted me to go back. So I'm going to go back to my birth. How's that sound?
Yeah, I like it.
You know, I was a change of life baby. And I'm the youngest of five. And because of that, I think it taught me independence. I had to be independent growing up.
What was the spread between you and the others?
My oldest brother is 20 years, and then 18, 13, and then
gotcha.
10.
Got it.
So, you know, my parents were older, and being an older individual, I understand the energy sap that happens. So I had to do things myself. But I grew up lower middle class and happy to grow up there. I had a really good group of friends. I had a really great upbringing. But I was destined to be something. You know, I was destined to be a priest, destined to be a union guy, destined to be a policeman. And again, none of those things are bad. Like, they're all awesome opportunities and awesome careers. And I was following that career. And then one day, I was unceremoniously fired from a supervisory job that I was doing. I was working for a division of Car and Driver magazine. And in a two-year period, I took this region I was responsible for from number 12 in the region, 12 out of 12, to number one. And one day they came in and said, I no longer had a job. So I remember going home, sitting in my living room floor at those days, looking at the one ad, you know, in the Sunday paper, and looked at my wife, because I had a few children at the time. And I said, you know, I don't think I ever want to work for anybody again. I don't want to put myself into the position that somebody can make a decision that's not in the best interest of me and my family.
By the way, that's in some form or another, that's the story of many entrepreneurs that say, we've had it, going to figure something out.
So I didn't know what to do. I had no clue. So I became a real estate agent. I became an insurance agent. I actually studied locksmithing. I didn't know what to be. And I met my mentor.
All while raising a family. Well, interesting. Yeah.
Doing the best I could. My wife was working, and she still holds that accountable to me. So anyway. You know, so at the end of the day, I met my mentor at an incubator kind of setting where I was selling video real estate pre-internet. And we were putting these videos on kiosks in airports and malls and that kind of stuff. And my mentor, who to this day, he is now passed, but I will always be forever grateful, asked me if I wanted to be a recruiter. And I didn't know what a recruiter was. I thought he was asking me to recruit for the Army or the Navy. I was like, no, I don't want to do that. Well, I learned what it was. And, you know, at the end of the day, 39 years later now, I'm still doing what I'm doing and still consider myself an executive recruiter. And frankly, I can't imagine doing anything other than what I do for a living. With that, I have parlayed that experience into outsourcing. I have parlayed that experience into building an outsourcing company. And, here I am. This is what I do.
Interesting. So you had obviously challenges along the way in terms of getting to where what you ultimately wanted to do. And then you started a business with a partner. And you started it with certain values, Joe, that because you saw what you didn't want to do. Do you want to talk about that for a second?
Yeah. I had spent 16 years or so at a prior company that when I started there, I was a headhunter. And we were about $1 million in business. And by the time we were finished, we were an outsourcing company doing about $380 million worth of business. And about 2 years prior from my departure there, we were awesome. You know, best place to work in Pennsylvania, low turnover, high client satisfaction. We really, really had and built something that we had set out to build. And then somewhere along the line, the company became enamored with profitability, and the company became enamored with the need to generate more revenue. And at the time, we were pretty much, we hit critical mass. We couldn't do any more if, in fact, we were going to maintain our culture and maintain our foundation.
By the way, just to clarify, nothing wrong with profitability or increasing revenues, but...
Awesome. It's awesome, right? Again, we live in America, right? So we're supposed to be profitable and we're supposed to do that stuff. But at the end of the day, at the expense of what and at the expense of who, and that's kind of how I think about it. So,
at the expense of culture, in a sense, right?
Yeah. So it changed. You know, the company began to be what we were competing against for 16 years. And I saw that. And although I sat in the boardroom and I sat in the executive committee, I couldn't bang my hand hard enough or scream loud enough to stop that snowball going down the hill. So I quit. I resigned. And being the third employee of that company, I found out that founders aren't allowed to resign. So they threw a retirement party for me. So I retired. I retired from that organization to open Inception. And, you know, what Inception is it's a company based upon a culture of delivery, based upon a personal accountability and a personal responsibility to the patients we serve. You know, I don't know if you talked about what we do, but we're an outsourcing company based upon clinical research studies and based upon the treatments that are in human trials, you know, to determine whether or not they're going to be FDA approved and prescribed in the future. So at the end of the continuum of the people we serve are these patients that it's your mother, it's your father, it's your uncle, it's your aunt, it's your sister, it's your brother, it's your child. You know, these patients are suffering from illness, some of them terminal illnesses, and they rely on us for collecting the data for treatments that may be effective and safe for them. and we're in an industry that's unfortunate over the pendulum shifted about the last 40 years of today, the longer it takes our competitors to do the job, the more money that our competitors make. And that is, I think, a problem with me, and it sits with the problem with me, you know, because our job isn't about, well, let me rephrase it. We have to be profitable because I have 280 employees, but my job isn't to lead with profit. My job is to lead with excellence, is to lead with efficiency, is to lead with delivery. Oh, and how about that? We become profitable. What a concept, huh?
And lead with doing the right thing. It's
exactly right.
By your ultimate consumers.
Right. So that's who we are. That's what we do. You know.
So you mentioned culture. I know, Jess, you have some questions around that.
I do. I was just taking notes. You just mentioned lead with excellence. You mentioned doing the right things. It made me think about how you have less than 6% of a turnover. And it made me think about the study that happened at Sunglass Hut in 2008, how they were, you know, they kept going while everyone else was crashing. And it makes me wonder about, like, your company culture and what you're doing. They've said that they were successful because anybody could talk to anybody. What do you feel makes you guys so successful with your company culture and why your employees want to stay?
First and foremost, it's the ability that we have to attract the right people. People, I call it the right side of the bell curve, like the 20%ers of the world, right? These people have intrinsic qualities of delivery, intrinsic qualities of commitment, drive, motivation, determination, any synonym you want to look up for excellence and grit. We get them, and we can attract them. And when we attract them, we give them the autonomy to do who they are and be who they are. They already have the experience. I don't need to teach them how to do what they do. I just need to make sure that we give them the freedom to do it the way they want to do it. And that freedom, I think, is what keeps people engaged.
I love that. What I hear is, like, you're giving them freedom to grow, to learn, to understand with their own personality and the space for that. So I really appreciate that a lot.
And by the way, I just want to mention part of it starts with picking the right people. Obviously, your background helped you a lot with that because you've been picking the right people your whole career, I think.
Yeah, 39 years as a recruiter, as a headhunter, is testament to the fact that I kind of do the right thing there. So,
if you had to describe in a few words before we go to commercial break, what are the primary things you're looking for when you're picking the right people?
Personal attributes, who they are, what they're made of.
Character.
You know, I can have a person with 20 years of industry experience compared to a person with 20 years of industry experience doing the same job, and one of them is the one we want, and the other one I don't. You know, it's who they are. It's what their makeup is.
That's an interesting observation, and it's a recurring theme on the show. We ask that question a lot to people, and I'd say more often than not, they say character. We say we can teach people, say we can teach anything, but you can't teach character. You can't teach depth. You can't teach, you know, who a person is. So it's a great lesson and a great time to take a break and hear a minute about Inception Group, and we'll be right back.
Inception Group, a full-service clinical outsourcing company, supports biopharmaceutical companies through every stage of clinical research and regulatory submissions. Founded in 2011 by two partners with decades of experience, Inception emerged from a need to bring back patient-focused, employee-led, client-centered service to an industry that had become transactional, faceless, and overly profit-driven. Today, a team of professionals, driven by science, fueled by passion, and committed to quality, work together to deliver meaningful, high-quality results. In the changing landscape of clinical research, we're creating a new kind of future, one where integrity outweighs self-interest, where transparency cultivates trust, and where people deliver on their promises.
Welcome back to Founders Forum. We're here with our guest today, Joe Arcangelo. Jess Hallahan is in the studio with me, Jessica Hallahan. But she's like a Jess to me, so that's how we're doing it. I have Anne sometimes, I have Jess sometimes, you know. So anyway, we were just talking about your business and how you got there and how you picked the people and your company culture. Joe, it wasn't a smooth ride to starting the business, and I know because you're an entrepreneur, it's not really a smooth ride every day in running the business. I know some of your challenges, but what would you say are the biggest challenges you have to face as an entrepreneur in your business?
Today, it's probably capitalization. You know, we've built the company to about $30 million, and I like to say we built the company with Band-Aids and paperclips to that point. And we have aspirations. You know, we have aspirations to get to that $400 million, $300 million number. That I think would build a legacy company that we're building. And in order to do that, we can't continue to do what we do to get us to $30 million. So we need an influx of capital. We need some capitalization. And the difficult part about that is I can't get capitalization of somebody who wants to sell me to a big box CRO because it'll change the culture. And all the people who are coming to me for the culture and for the reasons of who we are, I'm not going to do that to them. So
whenever there's a challenge, usually the leaders of the businesses have some strength to deal with those challenges. You've dealt with them up to this point. What strengths do you feel you have to accomplish those? Because you've mentioned $30 million revenues, which is not a tiny business, but you want to do 10, 15 times that over the next several years. So what do you bring to the table that you think will help you get there?
I said this earlier. I think there's a fine line between being stubborn and stupid. I am steadfast in this belief of who we are and what we do, and I don't waver from it. And none of the people in my business will waver from it. You know, we have a solution to a common problem and to almost an acceptance of mediocrity today. We have a solution, and we're not going to change that. And yeah.
So your strength, I would say, is in passion, commitment, faith,
yeah,
perseverance,
yeah,
those kind of things, right? Gotcha.
Yeah.
Jess, you have any follow-up to that?
Sorry, I was just listening. no, I like that you're talking about, when you're talking about that solution, what I hear is that you're being very solution-focused, and I think that also why maybe you have such a good employee culture is because they feel protected and safe. So I think not only do your clients, but also your employees feel protected and safe. So I think that's awesome.
Yeah, you know, and the solution orientation that we have, you know, our clients are happy with us. You know, we have 97% client satisfaction, which is, again, in our business, people are winning awards for 56% client satisfaction. And to us, that's a participation trophy. We're not interested in that. So, you know, for 97%, I think that's awesome. It's a good signpost that we're doing something right.
It's amazing. You also mentioned prior that you have your turnover rate is, I think, 6% on a client, on an employee base of 280 employees, which is really impressive. Yeah. I assume what we just talked about is part of the reason, but can you elaborate on why your turnover rate is so low?
Again, I mean, Jess asked that just a few minutes ago, but I think it's the culture. It's the culture. It's we hire experienced people, and we let them utilize their experience to do the right thing. And we painfully go through evaluation of people. Like it's we have a very interesting process that's kind of proprietary that we do our evaluation.
Well, I knew there was more to it. That's why I followed up on that question. Right. But so I had a feeling there's some secret sauce there.
We do. We have a little bit of a process of how we do what we do, and it allows us to attract the best and the brightest. So.
Gotcha. Joe, we've been talking a little bit about the future, and a question that you chose that I like to ask, so I'm glad that you chose it, is if we're sitting here and it's November 6, 2027, and we're looking back on the last 3 years, what would have to happen? And because you're a passionate guy and your soul is into this business, I can tell from the times we've talked, you know, what has to happen both professionally in the business level and on the personal level for you to feel like that was a successful 3-year period in your journey?
You know, there's a magic number in my head of 100 million. And the 100 million, I think, gives us a level of credibility in my business that we can then become the legacy company that I want to become to build it to higher than that. At that number, I think the infrastructure could be built, should be built. And that's what my goal will be over the next 3 years, is to continue to build that infrastructure. You know, we built a $30 million company without salespeople. I need them if I'm going to get to $300 or $400 million. So that's part of the infrastructure. There are other things I need, like a financial system, other than paper clips and rubber bands.
Gotcha.
But yeah, we need to hire internal people to help get us to the next level. And 100 million, 3 years. That's the goal.
I have an idea for you. We can talk about after the show, maybe a way to pursue that with a little bit of outside help, because there are people that I've been talking to that's kind of what they do. They help people.
Great.
Help you to help put all the people in place that you need to get to where you're going. I know you're a reader. What kind of books do you like to read?
You know, my old administrative assistant, love her to death. She was going for an MBA, and she came in one day and she said, "You got to read this book called Good to Great." And I'm like, "Good to Great? Never read it." Well, I read it, and it's now become my Bible of life.
That's Jim Collins, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's just a wonderful book, and I would highly recommend it. You know, the Eckhart Tolle, The Power of Now, I think is a very, very awesome book. You know, from a perspective, Jess, that the power of now is kind of important. Live in the now. Don't live in the past or what you perceive the future to be. And then I have a third one, and that's The Leadership Qualities of Attila the Hun. You know, when I was in high school, I was a kind of a geeky kind of a world cultures guy. And I loved Attila the Hun and the Visigoths and, you know, Roman culture. And you know, one of the things that I get from that book is, if you don't have a qualified successor to your industry, your business can literally fail. And Attila the Hun was on the verge of overthrowing Rome, and he was slain, and he didn't have a valued successor. So,
well, that actually leads me to another question I had. That's a great thing, because you have told me, I don't think we've said it on the air, that it's not your intention to ever really sell this business, and which means you need successors. And maybe elaborate on what your long-term vision for the business is and what succession would look like in that instance.
Yeah. You know, my business partner used to be one of my employees, and he helped me build a particular niche at the old company. And he is bright and smart and younger and highly qualified. You know, the question that I will have for him, and we discuss this frequently, is, does he want it? You know, the running of a $30 million, $100 million, $300 million company is time-consuming. So we're in the process now over the next 2 or 3 years of whether or not we're going to hire a CEO or hire somebody who's going to be able to manage it. You know, if he doesn't want it, my preference, I want him to take it. But, you know, he has younger kids and he has family and other things. So we'll see. But he's highly qualified, more than capable, and I would love to see him.
Might it be he and some other people? If he,
Could be. Yeah. I mean, you know, I always tease him. I'm never leaving. I'm going to be there all the time, and you know, I'll be coming once a week, once a month, whether I'm retired or not, just to make sure that things are on track. So he's never going to get rid of me.
Do you have a leadership team to look to?
We do. Yeah, we do.
So that's great. I'm going to throw a couple others. We only have a minute or two, but I'm going to throw a couple surprise questions at you. Do you listen to music? Do you like? Because that's a big thing for me. Do you like music?
I do. And I'm
what's
kind
your
of,
favorite music to listen to?
I go across the game. Of course, I'm 70s, you know, rock, and I was a disco kid in the 70s, and today I like indie pop, whatever that's called, or, you know, so yeah, I like music, and frankly, you know, kind of like the old Bugs Bunny cartoon, when I get stressed, I listen to classical music really, really loud. Mm-hmm. And kind of just soothes my soul.
So. We should talk more about music. Very similar tastes and very similar. Yeah. I use classical music that way as well. So, Jess, how about you? I've never asked you that.
Oh, my music is typically country, but honestly, I'm also the person who can listen to anything. So, but I do have a question.
Go for it.
Yeah. You mentioned you were talking about like financial systems and sales systems and things like that, and then we went right into reading and things. How important do you think is personal systems to be an entrepreneur?
Define personal systems.
So like reading, you talked about music when we were off air, we talked about golf. How important do you think those are?
You know, you know, I read all the time. And I'm reading with an intent of self-betterment. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Like I don't read for fun. Mm-hmm. I read to learn. I read to pay attention.
Although that's your fun.
Yeah.
Well, it is. And, you know, and the bad side to me is people say, well, what's your hobby? And I'm like, work's my hobby, which is a problem, right? I mean, that's a problem. But at the end of the day.
Maybe not. Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, it's, you know, I've been blessed. I love doing what I do. And as an older gentleman to sit there and say, I can't imagine to do anything other than what I do every day that I do it. It's kind of cool. It's kind of fun, and I'm proud of that. So, yeah.
I love that.
I'm actually glad you brought that up. I'm in a development group of people that we get together each week, and lately we've been talking about there's a story about the British cycling team. I don't know if you know it, but it's quoted in the book Atomic Habits by Jim Clear, and the British cycling team was like the worst team in history. Like their sponsors didn't want to sponsor them anymore, or anything like that, and the coach introduced an idea where we're going to work on tiny little things, but we're going to do one thing at a time, 1% things that can add 1% to the deal. And they did this consistently over time to where they become the winningest team in cycling in the world and, you know, the most prosperous and everything else. And they did it through those little habits, and that's, I think, personal systems is what you're talking about.
Sure.
So you have yours, Joe. It's just that yours are built around work, and if that works for you, that's great. Everyone's a little different with that. So and you have your backup systems. When work is too much, you'll listen to classical music, right? So
yeah.
So hey, listen, I want to thank you all for being here today on Founders Forum. It's really great talking to you, Joe. Great story. And we'll see you all next week. Thank you, Jess, for being here.
Of course.
And we'll see you all next week on Founders Forum. Mm-hmm.